FYLP is sponsored by CapturedPrey.com. Visit CapturedPrey.com today for all your import and third-party Transformers needs, and save even more through the Captured Prey loyalty program. You can also save on shipping on domestic orders of $150 or more. See website for details. CapturedPrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service. Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com for all your vintage toy needs. You can also find Mega Toy Fan at popular robot and toy conventions year-round. Minimize your costs and maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com.
Transformers for your listening pleasure, TFYLP for short. Join us and discuss the latest in Transformers fandom. Now, where did I put that chorus stop?
Ratchet, can you take the chorus stop?
Transformers, defenders of truth, robots who fight in disguise.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, TFYLP, episode number 165, recorded August 21st, 2015. I'm getting tongue-tied here already. I am your host, Daron Land, a.k.a. Weird Wolf. Along with me this evening is Jim Black.
Hello.
Rick Alvarez.
Yes, I am really this handsome.
Chad Williams, he'll be with us for a while.
I'm hiding behind Blaster.
And also joining us this evening for the first time, Mr. Ben Yee from BWTF.com. Welcome aboard.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for having
me on. Ben.
Ben's got a long-running website. He's had BWTF for how long? What, about 15 years
Since
or so?
97.
Oh, it's been around a while.
That was, I think, the first website on Transformers I ever found.
Mine was big.
I was in high school. I think I was a junior in high school when I found it. I was just trying to learn about this show called Beast Wars.
Mm-hmm. Huh? It started out as primarily a Beast Wars only site, didn't it?
Yep, didn't expand to other lines until about 2000, when after Beast Machines ended.
Yeah.
It's been growing and growing ever since.
Well, it's awesome to have you aboard, and we welcome your wealth of knowledge and experience with the hobby and the brand of Transformers. We'll be talking about tech specs, bios. Are they a lost art? We still get some sort of biography on some of the toys now, but they're nowhere near the extent that we had in the past. And there was a time whenever bios pretty much just disappeared from the packaging. We'll talk a little bit about bios, our favorite ones, our least favorite ones. Are they important? Things of this nature. If you want to, if you're listening to us, and if you want to tweet to us or message us on Facebook. Whether we're live or if you're listening to the audio version of us, you can reach us on Twitter at TFYLP. I'm monitoring the feed right now, so if you have any questions, comments that are relevant to this episode or this show, feel free to shoot them to us, and we'll check them out. And if they are relevant to the show, we'll mention them. Be sure to use the hashtag TFYLP. And tweet us at TFYLP. We're also on Facebook, on our Facebook group. So this past weekend, Wichita, Kansas was a little place called TF Expo. Got to attend it for the very first time. Went down there with Orson of CapturedPrey.com, one of our sponsors. He he needed some help to run the booth, so I went with him and had a great time. It's a great show. It's a small show experience. I wouldn't say it's like TFCon or BotCon in size, but that's not to say that it wasn't enjoyable. It was quite an enjoyable experience. I give kudos to Phil Searle and all the people that helped him make it happen. Dan Gilvezan was extremely approachable, even though he was very, very busy. I didn't get to interview him, unfortunately, because, I mean, if he wasn't at the autograph table with the line down the aisle, he was in a panel. And he was very busy, but very accessible. I mean, you could walk up to him and say hi. Buzz Dixon, I got to interview him, which if you're listening to the show now, wait till after the show and go check out the interview. There's a video interview up on our YouTube channel. Check that out. He's got some great little stories and information on his work with Generation One Cartoon. Buzz Dixon, for those of you who don't know, he was a writer and story editor for the original Transformers cartoon. He was one responsible pretty much for the episodes, I believe, The God Gambit, Prime Target, to name a couple. He along with Flint Dilley, did a lot of the editing for the show. And he's got some great stuff to talk about. So check out that interview on YouTube. Audio version will be up soon. Although it's been brought to my attention, we are having some issues with the podcast getting fed out to iTunes and Stitcher and the other podcast outlets. And I do not know why that is. I suspect it has something to do with WordPress, recently updated. And I don't know what changed, but something is not causing the podcast to be sent to those different places. The podcast, the last two podcasts, episode 164, and the Buzz Dixon interview have been published. And if you want to download those, you can go to tftalk.net at this time and you can download the MP3 version from the website. I do apologize for the delay, and I am going to look into it. I've just been extremely busy this week, and I'm going to get into that. So we'll check that out. But Buzz Dixon, I want to thank him for being on the show again. He was a great guest. Loved talking to him. I also spoke with Matt Frank, who I'm sure Rick Alvarez is a little familiar with. he's a super, super cool guy, known as the Kaiju King. He works for IDW and does some work on the Transformers comics, as well as a few other franchises. And he does some great work.
Notably Godzilla.
Yes. Yes.
So if you're into Godzilla, then you know Matt Frank.
Yeah. He had a lot of his artwork there, some prints for sale, and just amazing, amazing work. And he is going to be a guest very soon. We're going to work out a date. He didn't have a chance to talk with me at the show on air, but because he was so busy doing commissions. But he will be on the show very soon, and look forward to talking to him about his work on IDW and also with Play With This too. So we'll do that. So tonight we're going to talk about tech specs. Let's get into the meat of this. There's a lot of great great discussion that can be had about this topic. What are tech specs? Anybody want to talk about what tech specs mean to you? Let's start with Ben. What do tech specs mean to you as a collector?
Tech specs add an entire dimension to a Transformers toy that I think to this day a lot of toys don't have. I remember back in 84 when I first got my first set of G1 figures. Among them were Ravage and Rumble, Sunstreaker, Ironhide, Ratchet. I had a very generous uncle. My parents would have never bought that many for me at one time. And I remember looking at the packaging, and I was actually kind of confused for a while because I didn't understand why there were these write-ups in the back, because what I had previously collected was Star Wars. You didn't kind of need write-ups for Star Wars. You watched the movies, and you wanted Han Solo, and you wanted R2-D2. There was no need for it. Okay. Transformers, at that point, the cartoon hadn't come out yet. I hadn't read the first issue of the comic yet. It was out. I hadn't read it yet. So I didn't know what these were. So the only context I had for them was the blurb on the back of the packaging and the tech specs. But when I finally saw the cartoon, I finally read the comic, I already had some context just from the packaging, which is kind of amazing. And instead of just this generic transforming robot, which, you know, I had a couple in my collection, now I had a character. And that's the difference is, you know, it's the difference between this nameless automaton and a living, breathing creature character that has feelings, that has capabilities. And what I found interesting was not everyone in G1 was the super-powered, awesome robot. Not everyone was Voltron, right? One guy had a bad temper. Another guy wasn't physically strong, but he was really brave. You know, it wasn't until you got to the leaders till it was kind of like, you know, overpowered city. But the regular characters, I also love the tweaks of, hey, this guy can teleport. This guy can create sonic booms. That's huge because, you know what? Toy doesn't do that. But, hey, now that you told me that character can do that, now in my mind, especially 9-year-old mind, the toy does that. So it's this huge dimension, and you mentioned something earlier about tech specs kind of waning and coming back and so on over the years. I feel like the toys are done an immense disservice whenever there's not a tech spec, and I believe that firmly. Whether it's your kid baseline, you know, whether it's Rescue Bots, whether it's RID, and I will tell you right now, I'm very, very happy that Generations is giving the write-ups on the back of the packaging, you know, brief blurb, but then giving us those big write-ups on the back of the comic books. I think those are fantastic. What I do miss is last year's ability bar, where they had the graph, and it was very G1 style, and it would have a write-up. I think if they found a way to marry last year's style and this year's style, we'd have this perfect mesh of a tech spec, especially targeted at folks like us.
When you say folks
like us, you mean the collectors or the
folks who actually
the 12
year actually folks who actually don't just tear the bubble off and throw the thing in the garbage before they even walk out of Toys R Us. We've all been to Toys R Us or Target or whatever. I know sometimes I've seen like Transformers packaging, just like the bubbles ripped off and it's like in the garbage can, you know, near the door, and I'm like, man. There's like this whole element you like just dumped before you even left the store. that's what I mean.
I was showing it before the show, but you know, I've got this is from my original collection. It's an entire album full of tech specs, bio cards, and box art, even robot points, and it absolutely. To me, this is what preserves my original collection. Even though the toys, many of them are long gone, I can still look through this and remember the characters that I had. For the most part, boxes are bulky and in the way. A lot of people don't care about the boxes. And I agree. They can take up a lot of space if you do keep them. Mm-hmm. But to me, especially like now with the advent of third party figures that have some of these have absolutely amazing artwork on them. A good example is Gigapower's Gutter. If anybody's seen that, it's like a mural painting on the front of the box. The thing is gorgeous. And then if you have the Combiner Wars today, which I like the fact that a lot of them have like the comic, the IDW comic in the back with a huge piece of artwork depicting the character on the back of it. I love that. It's to me the tech spec bios not only give you the character, especially on the non-show or non-comic characters that are very prominent in the comic. They may not appear in any other media other than toy form. And in that instance, the tech spec bio is pretty much the only way you get any characterization for that toy's character.
Well, let me ask you something, and I'll throw this out to the whole group. For characters that are not in the show or that don't appear in the comic, how important is that bio to you?
Vital.
Exactly. I totally agree. It is essential. In my opinion, I agree with Ben. You know, whenever the bios that we have today, at least we have a little blurb on the back of a comic, or maybe a short two sentence thing on the back of the package. But to me, in modern toys, the tech spec and the bio is a afterthought. What the toy represents. I mean, it's like, okay, let's just throw this toy out there, and a lot of them have characterization in the comic. A lot of them are straight, you know, because they're popular in the comic, we have a toy of it, or it's in the cartoon. But some of them don't, you know, and those guys that don't, I mean, I remember back in the day, one of the things that drove me to buy certain toys, or ask my mom to buy certain toys, was it in the cartoon? Because the cartoon was first and foremost to me. Mm-hmm. And if it was a character I loved in the cartoon, I wanted the toy. Second of all, I read the Marvel comics, and if it was a character in the comics I liked, for example, Skullgrim. I know we talked here recently about some Pretenders and Skullgren. I really don't care about Pretenders in general because they're not one of my favorite parts of Generation One. But Skullgren has a special meaning to me. One, because my brother bought my original Skullgren for me as a gift. And that meant a lot to me. But he was also pretty prominent in an issue or two of the original Marvel comic run. Mm-hmm. And I just loved the way he looked in the comic, and he really appealed to me. So I wanted Skullgrim. And not only do tech specs give a characterization for a toy that doesn't have representation in the comics, in the cartoon, but if it does have characterization in the comics or the cartoon, the tech spec bio helps fill in the gaps or fill out the character even more. So yes, I fully agree with Ben and Jim. I think they're vital to the toy.
I think Optimus Primal on Beast Wars kind of summed it up when he was talking about the arc. He said, die-cast construction, a lost art. I think tech specs are kind of the same way. I think they've, even though they've changed and are different or they've disappeared over the years, I think the way they were in G1 was the best way, and they've really lost something along the way because they don't do them that way anymore.
Well, you know, I can speak to that. There is only so much information you can put on the back of the packaging. Mm-hmm. People are hungry for information. They do want to know about the character. But you have to understand that you have to put all these legal statements on there. You have to sometimes put cross-sells. You have to show close-ups of the character out of the package so people know what they're buying. And the more stuff you put on there, the smaller and smaller and smaller your tech spec bio is going to get. And that really kind of limits just how much you can talk about a certain character. And I do want to say it's not because of lack of creativity that we're getting these tech specs the way we're getting them now. It's really due to all this other stuff that kind of fills up the back of the boxes. And when you have the trilingual stuff, that makes it even worse. Sometimes I think they just cut the bio out altogether because it's just more that they have to pay someone else to translate for other markets.
Well, why don't they put it on the instructions, kind of like they did the 30th anniversary? You know, they had this big ass picture of a character that you've already seen on the box, you've seen in the box. Why put that on the instructions? Instead, put the bio on the instructions, put the tech spec on the instructions, and make it, you know, that much more presentable, even though it's not on the box anymore.
Or better yet, I just recently picked up the Unique Toys Warlord, and it has no bio at all on the package. Well, actually, I think it does. But it comes with a baseball-sized card, where it's got like the box art on the front, and then you flip it over and you can have like a little bio. Well, for example, you've got, here's Machine Wars Megatron's card. And then on the back, you have his it's mirrored here. You have his tech spec, and that's roughly baseball sized card, or baseball card sized. So, I don't understand I see what you're saying, Rick. I mean, you got G1 Center Twin here. Look at his tech spec. It is like tiny, tiny print at the bottom there. And, you know, you got all the legal print and all that stuff above. And then you have the instructions for the toy right above it. But if you're running out of room on the packaging, at least throw in like a baseball card with the bio on it, you know.
Okay, so let me just play devil's advocate. In that case, now you're paying for additional materials to be created. So that's that makes the cost of the item you're producing that much higher. And there are budgets that these companies need to adhere to. Ultimately, the tech spec is a small selling point. And if it's not on the package to entice someone to say, oh, this character does that, I really like that, then is there a point for a company to include it at all if it's not on the package? So just thinking about it from their point of view, because I know we've even had those discussions while I was there.
So I also agree with you on that aspect too, because it goes back to what like Ben was saying and what I was saying, that if it's a toy that doesn't have any representation in mass media, be it comics or cartoon, then if you're in the store and you're standing there and you're looking at all the toys and you pick up this toy and it looks cool, but you really have no connection to that toy beyond how it looks. I mean, I admit I have bought a toy because I thought it looked cool, not because what the character was. But if it's a cool character, that entices me even more. And sometimes I've been enticed to flip the package over and see what the bio says. Hey, does this character sound like something I'd like? And for example, my favorite Transformer of all time, Weird Wolf. Little to no characterization in the cartoon. I think Monzo had one line in the Rebirth. And he had like no characterization. He was prominent in the Japanese cartoon, but I wasn't even aware of the Japanese cartoon until 1998, you know, and didn't even see it until like the early 2000s. So he was relegated to a few panels in the comic book and his bio card. But the bio card is what sold him to me. He's really intelligent. His character is really intelligent, but yet he's got a few screws loose. So, you know, you never know what's going to come out of his head. And his partner Monzo is a ex hyper wrestler, which I I love wrestling. So, you know, it's like he's super smart. He's got a few screws loose, and he likes wrestling. Hey, this is me. I just latched onto that character. Why? Because his tech spec spoke to me. You know, it really leapt out to me as something that was really cool. And I really don't know if I would even care about Weird Wolf had it not been for his tech spec. Plus, I think his box art is pretty wild, too. Ben, that makes me think or ask you, does box art pay any relevance to you as far as a bio.
It totally does. But I wanted to comment on what that round that you guys just went through. And I'm not going against my earlier point here, but I'm in agreement with Rick on a lot of things that he said. You look at your Sinner Twin card there. You've got a tech spec. You've got one line above it, one line below it, legal information. Yeah. It's all in English. Now took a look at a modern package and look at how many languages they have to squeeze onto one package. Mm. That's a lot of real estate that's lost immediately. And I'm going to give credit where it's due. I think for 30th anniversary and for this year, I think for generations, for the most part, Hasbro has done a great job of doing the tech specs. Last year, we had more traditional tech spec write-ups, you know, not as great as we might remember from the past, but, you know, at least it was a paragraph and not two sentences. And then we'd have the tech spec bar underneath with the skills, strength, all that. And then this year we have these full-blown write-ups that someone clearly took some time to sit down and write as Soundwave or Rung on the back of the comic books. But on top of that, we have a couple sentences on the back of the packaging. So I would argue they realize for the generation's target audience, which is us, there is a value add to that. But they also realize that, you know, look, you're probably going to buy Superion regardless, right? You're not gonna buy Silverbolt, Air Raid, and Firefly, and then go, eh, I'm not going to get the rest because their tech spec isn't on the back of the box. Like, you're going to get the whole thing. So the value add is when you crack it open, you're like, oh, look at this great write up on this back on the back of this comic book. I think while we're not maybe in the golden age of tech specs, I think they definitely deserve credit for pushing it back in that direction, because for a while, especially during Prime, it was getting sparse. And I understand the necessity for it, but I can understand the necessity for something and still miss it. regarding packaging art, that, like you said before, it's an element of the character's personality, right? Whether the person looks imperious or strong or just kind of small and kind of cute, you know, it depends on the character. And I do like what they're doing right now with package art, where there's this separation. Rescue Bots, they're basically just borrowing animation model line work and they're using that. So great, there's this instant connection to what's on TV. With RID, they're basically just taking promotional art and putting it on. The packaging. So again, you've got that great association, and that's great for kids because it's bright, it's happy, it grabs their eyes. It's what you want. But then for us older fans, we're getting the painted artwork. We're getting the, you know, the nice big full body representing classic characters. And I remember thinking for a while when they started leaning more towards kind of that anime comic book Dreamwave-y style of art, I kind of missed the painted. I know it's computer painted, not hand painted, but there's still something about that look that's very distinctive, where it looks almost like brushwork, even if the brush is a computer brush. I think package art is huge in not just selling the personality of the character, but it's a whole package, right? You look at the package and it's just coming out at you. It makes you want it even more, even if you are a kid who's just going to toss the packaging away.
Well, I forget what line was it. Was it like early universe that had like one character on the box art or on the package art? I think it was like Prime or something.
Beast
other.
Machines.
Was it Beast Machines?
Cheetor everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like you had Cheetor as the box art, even though you might have had Night Viper in the package. There's a random character, Night Viper. Night Scream with the turd of doom hanging off his head.
But you know what was bad about that too? If you looked at a shelf, and you guys will remember this, you know, you go to Target, you go to Toys R Us in 2000, it was the Beast Machine section was just a sea of blue and yellow. Because the hardback was blue, Cheetor's art was yellow, and it was in the same position on all the packaging. Mm-hmm. So that threw a lot of people off. And I think from a visual standpoint, it didn't stand out. I think it kind of it just all blended into each other. So like you just said, you know, you had Night Viper on who's the toy, but you've got Cheetor on the card. Once it all becomes a big jumble and you're like, you know, half an aisle away, it's hard to tell what's what. Now, if let's say Primal's art was here and then Cheetor's art was here and Rat Trap's art was here, now you've got distinction, right? Now you've got red, brown, blue with Primal. You've got the green with Rattrap, the yellowish Eater. Now it all stands out, and your eye immediately says, oh, there's some variety there. Let me go check that out. Whereas mm-hmm. from a distance, if you see the same exact character over and over again, you're going to think, oh, they just got a pile of Cheetors over there. And I think they learned their lesson on that a long time ago.
You know, I will say that sometimes the lessons learned, but then teams get switched around and
yep.
And they make the same mistakes over again. And the mm-hmm. biggest mistake that I can think of was that first G.I. Joe movie where all the cards were black. And all the figures had black outfits on.
Mm.
So that was the biggest complaint that we saw behind the scenes was that
mm-hmm.
parents, grandparents, they couldn't tell what characters were
right.
which. And they couldn't remember. It was harder to remember what characters they had already gotten or they knew that they already had because the color palettes were all the same.
Yeah. Now, I totally get what Ben is saying there too. Because even as an adult, I have to admit the little kid in me comes out whenever I'm going for a Transformer hunt. You know, you walk onto an aisle in Walmart or Toys R Us, and you're looking. You have in your mind, okay, I'm looking for Crosscut. You know, and you know that that some of the others in there in that wave, you had what Scoop and I think Scoop and a couple others.
Starscream.
Starscream. So, and you're looking for a silver character, you know, and mm-hmm. And you walk onto a toy aisle, and from a distance, you see the light color and the big box art, you know, right behind.
You run towards it.
You run towards it because you found it, you know. Just that feeling and everything, it adds to the excitement of the toy
mm-hmm.
that was lost for so long to me. You know, and like Ben said, I mean, during Beast Machines, you could walk onto the toy aisle and it was just a sea of blue and yellow. And the only way to really see which toys look through there or pick it up and, you know. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how many times. Well, Cybertron was another example.
Yes.
Pretty much the entire Unicron trilogy, because you had the packaging was just all so uniform, and don't even get me started on the bubbles for Armada. Oh my lord. but you know, packaging aside. You know, I mean, having to pick up each toy and look at the character, that it just detracts from it. You know, you want that excitement, the wow factor, the eye-catching thing. And I understand that in today's market, today's toy market, eye-catching colors and the visual attractiveness of the toy and character really play a huge point. in getting the toy to be purchased. But getting back to tech specs, yes, and we're getting back to tech specs here because you also want to know more about the toy whenever you see the toy, you pick it up. I like to flip it over and I read the bio, and then you're like, let's fill it out just a little bit more. This is another thing too. Generation one, that funky barcode on the back there that you had to have that red clear decoder to put it over top of that and read it, even though some of them you can really just read it without it, but there it is. And that gave you even more. You know, that's something I love from generation one, that the bar graph outside, or not the bar graph, but the line graph outside with the decoder.
Can you imagine what it's like to try to explain that concept to a marketer today and say, we're going to put this thing on the back that you can't read until you open it up and then take something out and put it over the box.
Mm-hmm.
The box that you
mind explode.
Can you imagine what it must be like to pitch that idea to marketers today?
Probably wouldn't work.
No, back then was the era of the secret decoder ring. I mean, You know, back then we had puzzles on the backs of our cereal boxes. You know, we were used to having to work for something like that. Now you got to put it out there or people just walk right by it.
Now you got to scan it with your smartphone and unlock it on the website.
Yeah. Well, then you also have the little round barcode on the insignias for the
precisely
for the RID 2 figures. You know, so times they are changing.
You know, but,
and attention spans. Yeah, I mean it's.
I kind of wonder. Do you suppose anybody has actually went through the toy aisle and cheated and just scanned the little Autobot code through the package?
Oh, sure. I've seen kids do it.
Have you?
When I was at Toys R Us, and a dad was with his kid, he picked him up, kid was short. He picked him up, and he's like, go. Kid took out the iPhone, just started having at it. And I was like, you know what? Good for you. You go for it. I know that kid can't afford every single figure. He probably has a Bumblebee at home. Have some fun. The thing is, you know, you have to rescan it every 24 hours anyway. So let him get a power boost for the day. Why not?
That'd be like one of us as a kid, you know, bringing one of our plastic decoders from the package to Kmart and going through the shelf and just reading all the profiles with the decoder. But no, I got to say, I agree with a great majority of what you guys have all said so far. As far as utilization of space, I agree, Rick. Trilingual packaging has been a big factor in that. On top of just the legal information and credits to who owns what and this and the other. But one thing that when you guys were talking about that came to my mind. I don't know if you remember. It's probably been 10, 12 years ago or so. Lee's Toy Review magazine. There for the longest time, in each issue, they were reprinting the Generation 1 tech specs on a page in each issue. Like one issue may have, Sideswipe and Ironhide. Right. Another one would have, Laserbeak and Rumble. And each month you'd get a couple new reproductions, printed inside there. I think they were also doing like a Transformers full guidebook or something that you can compile.
Yeah, the hardware a lot of those those articles
and that brings to mind something that if they're going to go out of their way to do a comic and a comic that's printed in English, why not take a portion on like the inside of one of the covers or something, shrink down the little bit of artwork on the inside of the cover, where they have the comic information at the bottom, just a little, and put the tech spec for that figure there on that figure's comic issue. That way it utilizes the space that's already there. They don't have to manufacture additional paper or product. They just have to change the amount of, red or blue ink they use a little bit. But I think that would be a way to excellently implement that for the collectors without really taking anything away from the toy or the comic in any major way. But yeah, I agree. That's one thing I wish would have stayed consistent. Ben said with Prime and Beast Hunters, that became a little scarce. And again, there were some lines we didn't get it at all. I want to say, was it the 2009 universe? Did we get profiles with that or?
Well, and then you have like Legends figures, which oftentimes you don't get bios with those characters, and
those packages
kind of sucks because a lot of the foreign markets actually only get the Legends figures.
Although I learned from the current Legends Skywarp that he makes weapons. I had no idea he did that.
Yes. Well, by way of comparison, the average Generation 1 small box, the small card back, was like that. Today that'd be considered a deluxe. This is what we're getting as our small class now. That's quite a lot less space to utilize, for a profile. Because, on the back here, you've got very little. You've got, like, I think one sentence. You got the pictures of the toy in both modes. Yep. Then you've got, a good third of the box, or a quarter of the box anyway, on your legal info and your, online links. So, there's not much space to do much with.
Well, I know one thing. And this goes back to actually what you asked before about the scanning at the store. One thing I could foresee them going to, and I think they're kind of leaning towards this already with the RID 2015 scanning symbols, is we may come to a point where all the packaging is really good for is legal information and some basic information about the character, name, you know, year of publication, all that. And then they're just going to stick, you know, a code on there, and you're going to
a QR code or something.
Yeah, and then you know what? You get a full profile write up and the artwork on your phone. I mean, people already do it to like price shop, right? During Christmas, you know, you download an app, you say, hey, I can find this thing for $5 cheaper down the road. Give me that price. It's the same principle. Or it's the same principle as that kid I saw whose dad was like, so yeah, scan everything you possibly can while you're in the aisle. You know,
scan all the things.
Yeah, there's nothing stopping that dad from saying, you want to read these tech specs? Scan them all. Scan all the packaging.
Imagine a day whenever you could walk into a toy aisle and pick up a Transformer, scan a QR code, and it pulls up a bio. Much like a Generation 1 tech spec, you see, let's say you see like this dark, stormy alien planet, and then you see this two-headed monster walk up. It's Hunger. You see this two-headed monster in CGI walk up and then transform and look and then pose, and then it slides over. And then you got like a bio. It's got a little animation and a bio next to it.
And they kind of sort of did that with Beast Hunters, because when they introduced the Predacons, they had that little game you could play, and then they would kind of stomp around, and then you'd see them in their alternate mode. So they definitely, of course, the ability, the technology exists to do that. And I think from a marketing perspective, they've already had inklings towards that. And I honestly believe what we're talking about here is inevitable. I don't think it's a matter of whether. I think it's a matter of when. It could be a couple years from now, but within the next 5 to 10 years, I could see it happening. That doesn't mean I want the tech specs on the packaging to go away. That doesn't mean I want the package art to go away. But if it does, but I still have it digitally, I'm okay with that.
Well, as long as it's still as long as it's archivable.
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
I have to add that caveat to it.
All right, so here's kind of like, to piggyback on that idea, here's where I think toys are going to be maybe even in 10 years. You're going to go into the brick and mortar store, or you're going to go online. You're going to buy the code. You're not going to leave the store with anything. Or maybe there'll be a place in the store where you can do this. But you're going to buy a code. You're going to scan it with your phone. And then that's going to send information to your home printer. It's going to print out the bio. It's going to print out the card art. It's going to print out all the legal crap. And then your 3D printer is going to print out the toy and paint it for you. And by the time you get home, you're going to have a fully assembled toy of all the paperwork.
Yeah,
and
I can see that.
Like places in like, say, Walmart or Target, where you just walk in and say you plug in your code that you just bought because you don't have a printer at home, and it just prints it for you right there.
I have to say, if we've reached the point where we can purchase and have printed and manufactured in our house our own toys, brick and mortar stores will be gone.
There will be certain things that you will always need to purchase at brick and mortar stores.
Food,
toiletries,
right? You can't print food, but you know everything will be supermarkets again, and we won't have regular retail for the most part, because it'll be able to be printed at the house, except for like wrenches and other things like that, washers and dryers. But
Yeah, it's 3D printers is going to change our economy. It's going to change our world that we live in, especially in America. And it all goes back to the idea that it starts with a QR code. You scan it, you get points, you get a booster for the game, or you get a bio. That's how it starts. And before you know it, it's Cyberdyne's taking over, and it's Kobayashi Maru.
Well, remember the original iPod. The original iPod, whenever it came out in, 2001, 2000, it was in the early 2000s. You had the original iPod, and it advertised 1,000 songs in your pocket. And you could, load it full of music and listen to it. Now everything plays MP3s and things. I mean, your phone, your PlayStation 4, your Roku, everything does it.
My kid's toys, and she's 3.
Yeah.
And she's got toys that can upload and play MP3s.
But it all started with the little device I'm not saying the iPod started it all. I mean, it was the first, but I mean, I think it was the first mass market device that really did that. And bring it back to what we're talking about, tech specs and everything. You've got to have a, I mean, there's something that's a game changer that's changing the way we buy toys. And I hope and pray that, you know, I agree with you. I see the, like, the 3D printer, you know, you buy it, you just go online and buy it, and it prints out right there in your own home. You don't even have to go to a store and get it. It's just right there. I just hope and pray that, you know, the packaging, art, or at least artwork and bios for the characters do not fall by the wayside. To me, and this is speaking specifically with Transformers and third-party Transformers, it's not just about the toy. It's about the toy, the character. It's the whole package, the whole deal. I, as a collector, want the whole show.
Yeah, but we grew up in a different time.
We did.
I think all that stuff is going to move to digital, even comic books. And I'm sure my kids will never walk into a comic book store asking for a new comic because they'll be able to download it. They'll walk into a comic book store because they want a vintage comic book.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember, I believe it was Aaron Archer said here a while back, several years ago, you know, how has Transformers or the toy market changed in like last 10 to 15 years? And he said, I believe he said something along the lines of the toy market used to be like 80%, 80 to 90% for the kids. You buy toys for kids, but it's getting more so now with the advent of video games and social games and little devices like iPods and everything, and iPhones, toys are becoming more and more a collector market and not a kids market. Mm-hmm. They're more for us. I mean, Titan Devastator, honestly, you know, I know we talked about it here a few weeks ago. I guarantee you the majority of people that's buying Titan Devastator aren't for kids.
Well, there's certainly a diversification that's happening in the toy industry, where it's kind of splitting off into two very distinct groups. You have your groups of collectors, who are your older fans with more revenue to spend, and then you have your children. And the toy products themselves are separating. So if you notice the newer products that are coming out, your Rescue Bots, your RID2, your Titan figures, the new Marvel figures, Star Wars, everything, it's moving to a younger, kid-centric style, and you see more of that product rather than the typical figures that, such as the Black Series or regular generation Transformers available. Mm-hmm. And then comparatively, you have NECA, other companies, even Hasbro making masterpieces, making action figures that appeal to R-rated television shows like Breaking Bad or The Walking Dead. So that middle ground that I think Transformers used to exist in is disappearing. And it's become much more, this is for you and this is for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, how does that tie in with tech specs and bios? How would you tie the disparity between young collector and old collector, and how and what part do tech specs and bios play in that?
Well, for your younger collectors, you look at all those lines, maybe even not so much Star Wars, but there's television attached to it, there's media attached to it, there's comic books attached to it, and you kind of have the perfect triangle where you have your toy, you have your media, video games and TV show, and then you have your licensing goods, all the t-shirts and book bags and stuff. That's the kind of perfect triangle. For adults, it's kind of blending into this is just the figure. The art has become a comic book now. the tech specs are getting shorter. They're not online. They're not necessarily collectible. You can't download the file. You can't permanently store it if you're a tech spec collector. There's a belief that if you look at a lot of the new Star Wars figures, you already know who Han Solo is. So they're not going to waste the back of the packaging telling you who Han Solo is.
So if I can kind of interject on the Star Wars figures, I was just at Walmart maybe 10, 15 minutes ago, and I saw the new lines that they got coming out. They got the C-3PO that's got parts that come off. When you look at the back of it, there's no cross-selling on there at all. There's nothing, really. They're not putting a lot of anything on the back of those figures.
And I don't think it's laziness. I think it's the realization that who is buying these figures, it's adult collectors, because kids...
What?
And he's dead.
Those kids are not buying those figures. Those kids are playing video games. Mm-hmm. And collectors already know who C-3PO is, and they already know that he's got an inner robot underneath all that armor.
But why is his arm red?
Spoilers. Because Jar Jar Abrams needed to sell more toys so he can make more money. So he said, well, we got to make his arm red so he's different, so that you have to buy a new one.
Right. Well, it's kind of like if you look at the old classics, one, like the ones when we were kids, you know, the ones from, you know, the very first ones that came out. There was a C-3PO that was completely gold. There was one that had like a slight silverish sheen, and then it had one where like one leg was like silver and the rest of the body was gold. They had variants, so I don't...
Variants, but they're variants from film to film, from Star Wars to Empire to Jedi.
Right.
They're not running changes or mistakes that they're correcting. Yep. I think it's a little different.
Yeah, the cool thing I saw about that that one particular C-3PO figure, I was pretty close to picking it up, but for the price, I think it's a little much.
Right. It's like the Millennium Falcon. They're putting out that big, giant 4-foot Falcon again with the new antenna. That's the only new part about it. Do I really need to spend $200 just to get that stupid rectangular antenna? Yes, I will spend it, but that's not the point.
Well, I mean, it's the thing is with that one figure, though, it was kind of almost like a throwback type of thing because he does have a silver leg. So it's kind of cool that they actually still implemented that, you know, at the end of that movie instead of just saying, oh, well, we're just going to paint all gold again.
But the question is, does it come with a holo Leia?
Hmm.
No.
And it doesn't have a tech spec on the back.
No,
so speaking of tech specs, I want to give a big shout out to Masters of the Universe because their tech specs are by far the best tech specs or bios or stories that you could ever have on a figure. And granted, these are oriented towards collectors. In many cases, you got to be part of a subscription to get them. Mm. But it is, look how long this is. This is huge. It makes reference to other characters. It makes reference to certain battles, which are referenced in other tech specs. There's, I imagine, on the wall of Mattel, who's ever the copywriter on this, has a map with everybody's name and little lines going here, here, and here, and here. And these bios or tech specs make owning the third Hordak or fourth or fifth Hordak that I have now for the classic series enjoyable because of that stupid bio on the back. Mm-hmm. And when we have a line, we have 50 million. Yeah, well, when we have 50 million Bumblebees and Primes on the market, I think there needs to be a bio to say, "Hey, why is this Toys R Us exclusive Bumblebee in G2 colors? What is the deal with that?"
And underneath the bio, the entire it says Generation 2 Bumblebee. And it says function espionage. Then it has this quote, and then it says, then right underneath that, for the entire bio, all it says is Plasticon.
Yes, that's true. I decided to dig through, and I grabbed some of my old tech specs that I have just kind of laying around, and I realized that the guy that bought Machine Wars stuff from me didn't get his bios. But something I realized on the Machine Wars is there's G2 logos on them.
There are.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought that was fairly interesting.
Indeed, there is.
I never
there's
really.
Megatron right here. Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I do want to.
It was a continuation of G1. Yeah. because it was kind of a spinoff of Beast Wars, and Beast Wars continued after G1, G2. So it was either a big mistake or someone was really into canon at that point.
Well, another thing I kind of like about the Machine Wars bios is everything is a digital number written on the side. Instead of, I mean, and G2 was pretty good about, like, the bar thing. I kind of liked that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they were completely walking away from the decoder thing, which was kind of a cool thing. But I think the decoder thing kind of went out in the 80s because think about, like, how many comic books you got that had decoders and everything had a decoder. Even you get a Cracker Jack box and it had a decoder in it. I think that's kind of a dying art, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But MicroMaster base.
Yeah, I kind of dug those right there. I mean, it still had the bar graph out to the right there. It, mm-hmm. it maintained the same format, but it had the bar out next to it, and you don't needed a decoder for it. It looked a little cheap, but at the same time, it served its function, and I like that.
Right, and then you got the G2 ones that are the same way.
Those are actually the best, yeah.
Yeah, and they actually have a really good bio for them, and I like the artwork on a lot of G2 stuff. I mean, a lot of it was unique because you didn't really see it. Even if you look at the comic book, they didn't really they kind of reflected, but not really. So it was almost like they just literally just said, hey, I got the toy. I'm just going to draw a picture of it, or mm-hmm. vice versa. Like, especially with, like, you know, Hooligan and Space Case.
Mm-hmm. Two of my favorites. Really
yeah, these guys are awesome. Cyber Jets are cool. I'm sorry. Yeah. They just are.
Got the whole lot at TF Expo for $20.
And that's awesome. Did you get the missiles with them?
I did not get the missiles. And I found out that I think it's Strafe. It's the modeled one. He's got the forward swept wings, I believe. Mm-hmm. I think he's just like Space Case, only like gray and brown.
Yeah.
I transformed him, and he's missing the light pipe face.
So yeah. The light pipe face just fell out on it.
Yeah, it's fell out. But other than that, Hooligan, I mean, it's like they just took him out of the package and threw the missile away and said, here. I mean, it's like he's perfect. I mean, tight and everything.
Hooligan, also known as Samus Aran, the Transformer.
The one thing a lot of folks don't know about those particular ones, with the swept back wings when you move them around, the stickers can possibly start, you know, frying away. Yes. Just right mm-hmm. at that joint, so you got to be kind of careful when you're buying them. If you're looking for one that's like mint crazy condition, but, you know.
Yeah. Well, let's get back on the topic here. I want to read some comments from our Twitter. I had some questions of the day earlier this week that were pertaining to this episode, and then after that, I want to go a little bit deeper into the tech spec bio. I want to talk about function and motto. After that, but before we go into the Twitter question of the day, I want to give a shout out to our sponsors, CapturedPrey.com, great toys, great prices, great service, CapturedPrey.com, and Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection with Mega Toy Fan, and find Mega Toy Fan at the biggest toy conventions near you, including BotCon and upcoming TFCon USA in Charlotte. So look for Mega Toy Fan there. Maximize your collection with Mega Toy Fan. Let's head to Twitter.
Real quick, Ron. I was actually in a separate discussion with a guy on Facebook here, Scott Holmes, and he's actually watching the show right now, and he wanted me to ask as far as an idea he had, what we thought about maybe in the package a code that we scan with, you know, say our smartphone or iPhone, whatever. That would unlock a coupon, a retailer or manufacturer coupon for additional figures as kind of a purchasing incentive, if that could be a thing.
The only way I can probably see that even getting away with having a coupon mm-hmm. like with the packaging is if it's like on the inside behind the figure where your camera can't scan it, or. Right. Like on the instruction booklet, because to be honest, if you're going to put it on the back, it's going to be like the same thing with the little barcode thing where everybody's trying to use it for the app, you know, for the game and everything like that. That's why some of them have like a faux, like a fake thing that's over it, so that way they can't scan it.
When he asked me about
the Transformers Adventure has a fake scan code over top of the little barcode, like Gregivore actually had a piece over the chest and then a fake scan code over her actual one.
Nice. When he was asking me about that, though, it actually reminded me of something that we had in Generation 1 that was right next to the tech specs, which was also a manufacturer incentive to get figures.
Right,
the
there.
Robot points. And that, something yeah. like that would be an excellent idea to be able to kind of return to the robot points in a fashion, maybe even have the coupon designed similarly
telling,
to that.
I was actually telling Rick before the top of the show, if Hasbro still did robot points and you could send them in, I would make a killing because I've got every yeah. robot point from every G1 Transformer.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize Darkwing and Dreadwind were worth 3 points. Wow. Anyway, let's go to Twitter. Magnesite at TFPFOZ. I always have a problem with that, I know. But another shout out. He says, at TFYLP, the current Combiner Ward comic bios are a welcome return to the form, but of course cut outside the U.S. I guess he's referring to the bios are kind of cut from the outside the U.S. Releases. RAC 2750, he says, only in Wave 1, Waves 2, and 3 have had them here, and presumably Wave 4 will as well. Yeah, you guys have any thoughts on those?
So in foreign countries, and we're casting a wide blanket here, right? But in
yeah.
general, let's say Australia. Let's just use Australia as an example. You and me, we probably pay $15-16 American for a deluxe figure. They're shelling out about $30. Mm-hmm. Do you really think they want another $2 or $3 thrown into the price point for a comic and then a tech spec in the back? Because mm-hmm. when you're paying the median between the middle ground between a Voyager and a Leader for a deluxe, stuff like that starts going out the window. You start thinking, you know what? I'll worry about the tech specs later. I just want the darn toy. And I know this because I talk to a lot of very frustrated Australian collectors who tell me this.
Yes.
So. Yeah, I mean, the foreign markets, they didn't get them, and that's unfortunate. Fortunately, there are, you know, I know when I do my tour reviews, one of the things I do is I scan those, and I put them on as part of the review. So they're not, I don't make it so big that you could print out your own copy, and that's on purpose because I don't need a, you know, cease and desist coming to my mailbox. But I make it big enough that on the screen you can read it and you can appreciate, you know, the layout. There are resources online. I know the wiki, you know, sometimes with certain things, they'll transcribe it or they'll talk about it. So there are resources online for you to get at least the knowledge of what that tech spec is. I think cost is a huge, huge factor with that. I mean, the cards are, you know, from Wave 1 of Combiner Wars, the smaller, the ones that came with the collector cards instead of the comic. I mean, you're paying for less cardboard, less paper. And let's not forget, this stuff has to get shipped from Asia. That means that's money they don't have to spend on the sheer weight of the thing. being sent over. So yeah, unfortunate, but economic reality. What was the second part again? What was the second tweet?
The second tweet was that they are they should be available in waves 2, 3, and 4.
Oh, the comic books?
That's the way I took it. I'm not.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. Also, the question 2 days ago I posed was a question that I asked at the top of the show. Are tech specs and bios important for Transformers? Magnuside also rang in on this, and he said, in the absence of other media, actually easier to miss these days, it frames who the character is and potentially the relationship to others. It's not a it's not essential for a child's imagination, but a useful framework to start. At Toy Box Soapbox, he says, living in the UK, we have had them severely cut down for multiple languages, which I think does the toy a disservice. In Generation 1, We got full bios, so every bot had character, which you understood right away from the bio. It gave them personality, which made them better. So thoughts on those?
Well, I got to say, the more I think about it, as we're discussing these, I'm in my mind coming to one basic conclusion, and like that one tweet said, in absence of other media, what I think we can all agree that tech specs boil down to is they are essentially the reason why we should care about a figure or why we should care about a character. I mean, you can pick up, you know, any transforming robot toy, you know, you go to Family Dollar and get a generic, you know, what have you, with the worst paint, and, you know, it's a transforming toy, you know, it'll serve your purpose to, you know, fidget and, you know, display it and what have you. But in the end, it feels so hollow and empty, kind of like that missing light piping that you have in the Strafe there. But when you have a tech spec with, you know, a little bit of meat to it, a little bit of, you know, about the character, you know, what his powers and abilities are, you know, what he likes, it helps to kind of boost that imaginative quality that so many kids use when they play with the toys, you know. When you have, you know, figures that you don't really know a lot about, you kind of make up your own stories in your head as a kid. And it's like, well, you know, this figure, you know, he can jump, you know, so high, or, you know, he can shoot lasers out of his ears or whatever. I don't know, weird powers. But like one for instance that I was actually just looking at here a minute ago. I don't know if you remember from like 2005 and 6 in Transformers Cybertron. We got some really interesting profiles in that series. I was looking at Cybertron Lugnuts, and something I completely forgot about. He's a toy collector. A transformer that is a toy collector. I mean, how radically different is that from anything we had ever seen? You know, and it made that character so much more fun, I think. I mean,
it's a toy really... that collects toys, that collects toys, that collects toys.
Right, right. You can essentially trip build in a wormhole style where he can collect himself to the nth degree.
It brings back the recollection of that meme picture of MP01 playing with Masterpiece or yes. Playing with the world's smallest, and it says masturbation. Optimus Prime plays with himself. It's like, yes. You know, one toy playing with another toy playing.
Pretty much.
Yeah, but yeah, SPTH Productions says, remember the Energon Armada? He remembers Energon and Armada for the pack-in card art. Yes. Armada was his first show in toy line. Hotshot and Sideways were his first Transformers ever. So for him, it was the card art. You know, I mean, it was part of the character of the toy. It's essential to it. Let's see here. Do you have anything else to add on to that?
Well, a little bit. The nice part is, since you mentioned Armada Sideways, that was another thing that was special, because not only did we have the profile about the character, but that also helped us to understand a little bit about something that was neat about that character, was the return of the Headmaster gimmick. And that kind of opened up that a little bit for people that, you know, weren't maybe alive in, you know, 87 or 88 when that was a thing. And so that added a little bit to that play value, too, as opposed to the Minicon just being a head. You know, these Minicons could, you know, do their own thing on the side and still function as part of the whole, as opposed to just being a generic weapon or whatever.
Right, because the I think the only other Headmaster that came out before that was Brave, and Brave, you know, if you lived in the United States, you wouldn't have gotten it. Mm. You had to order it online, and most people didn't even know that thing existed. So I mean, the Headmasters went away for a long time, almost.
Yeah,
it was pretty long. They just
now our Armada Overload was the same way, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now let's talk a little bit about aspects of the tech spec bio cards that a lot of them are actually lost in today's market. You don't see these particular aspects anymore. I know we spoke earlier about the little graphs out next to them. Well, let's talk a little bit about function and motto. Both of those you hardly see anymore at all. One of my favorite mottos, and I actually try to apply this in my daily life, and this is something that I want to talk a little bit more at length about too, is that if you read the tech spec bios, some of their mottos actually were miniature life lessons, because I love G1 Metroplexes. Vigilance is the foundation upon which victories are built. Staying true to your path, you stay vigilant in what you're doing, and it lays the foundations upon future victories.
It's pretty deep, actually.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And a lot of these G1 tech spec bios, and I remember as a kid, I would read some of these bios, and I'd be sitting there reading them out loud. My mom would hear me, and she'd say, "Read that again." And I'd read it, and she was amazed at the lesson that either the bio or the motto itself was teaching. For example, I believe it's pipes, G1 pipes. One man's junk is another man's art.
Yes, it is.
You know, I mean, everybody has their own little quirks. I mean, and as collectors, that speaks volumes to us. To us, this is the toys are treasures and art to us. To some other people, they're just junk. They're pieces of plastic. That motto speaks volumes.
Well, you know, that's very true, and that can be said about anything. Speaking to my mother-in-law the other day, and her love of purses. I'm like, why do you need so many purses? Why? Like, it just, I can't relate to her. She can't relate to me and my toys. But, you know, one person's stuff that clutters up your basement or your closet is another person's treasure. And it applies to lots of people.
Well, my girlfriend, her love is flip-flops, sandals. She loves them. She has probably 40 pairs. I'm like, okay, who needs that many sandals? But, you know, that's her thing. Everybody has their thing. But let's talk about function and motto. Mottos first. What do mottos mean to you, Ben? Let's hear your thoughts on this.
Well, mottos, I think, were very smart. And I didn't think of this when I was a kid, but as an adult, looking back, they only had this much real estate, right? So you had to sum up the character in a quick line. And the motto was the perfect way to do that, because more than telling me that Prowl is logical or telling me that Optimus is compassionate and so on, that one motto told me almost everything I needed to know about the character. And I have to say I missed them a lot. I'll also tell you, you know, those mottos, like you said, you read a couple to your mom and she found them rather profound. You know, I used to read them, and the funny part is I was just a kid, so I didn't even understand what some of them meant. So I would have to ask, you know, my uncles or my teachers and say, hey, I don't understand what he's saying here. And then when they explained it, I said, oh, yeah, that is how that character is on a TV show or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so it was almost like a teaching tool at the same time. Mm-hmm.
Vocabulary.
Yeah,
you know, my mom, she was absolutely amazed at some of these. I mean, you figure back in the 80s, Transformers were marketed to what, 7, 8, mm-hmm. 5 to 10 year olds, mm-hmm. essentially. And you have words like vigilance in there. I had no idea what vigilance was until I read it on Metroplex's tech spec, and she explained to me what it meant. And that's one of the ones that she was like, "Wow, that's profound." You know, the lesson that it taught. And I'm going to read another one here. Ultra Magnus. Consistency is victory. I apply that in my workplace. You know, be consistent. And that's one of the things that that my supervisors, they always say, I am Johnny on the spot. I'm very consistent. And they can expect me, if I'm going to say I'm going to be somewhere at a certain time, they can expect me at that place at that certain time, unless there was some extenuating circumstance, they expect me there. And I have to attribute a lot of my moral lessons. I have to admit, come from G1 Tech Specs. Consistency is victory. Wow. I love
did
that.
Did you grow up without parents? I mean,
yeah. Well,
and no. So, you know, it's always weird when someone says Optimus Prime was my dad growing up.
I don't mean it
weird,
in
that. A little sad. No, I know you don't. I'm just getting off topic.
I digress.
I got to say that
you were saying.
Well, you were saying that some of the tech specs that you apply in your life. I mean, there were some pretty odd and some pretty scary tech specs.
I'm not saying
too.
Every single one. Like, you know, cries and screams are music to my ears.
Do you hit it till it stands no taller than dust? Or
yeah, I'm not cries and screams are music to my ears. I mean, I'm not Charlie Manson or anything here, but or Weird Wolves. My pleasure with my enemy's pain comes.
Yeah. That's what she said.
But you know, yes, it did.
I wouldn't make it past the the parental groups today.
No. Well, see, the thing is, though, and that speaks to Weird Wolf's character. He was very intelligent, very violent, but he was also had. Even though he's intelligent, he had a few screws loose. And you can see that in his bio. My pleasure with my enemy's pain comes. You know, it's sing song, and it even says it in his bio. He talks to himself in a sing song backward way, and his motto reflects that. You know, it's just subtle nuances that are totally missed today. You know, along with them. I just read what Rick wrote, but I didn't read that. I didn't read that at all, but I totally astral train of thought just transformed into shuttle mode and flew off. But okay, let's talk about function of the toys. Or the characters. A lot of times, you know, we get a lot from the function of a toy. Bumblebee, espionage. You know, Optimus Prime, leader, obviously. Anything that about the function that really, what it means to you. Jason, let's hear from you.
I've been looking through a few of these tech specs, and I was actually looking through Space Cases, and his is Air Recon, and his motto is "My mind may be slow, but I move like greased lightning." And you think about it, that's actually kind of makes sense, because recon drones don't move very fast, but they get word out pretty quick. So mm-hmm. That's actually kind of clever.
Yeah, it is. It is.
That's a G2 figure. That's not G1. That's nuts.
I remember when I was a kid and I got Hot Rod, and I'm like, what's a cavalier? But I couldn't figure out what that word was. And it's like, I asked my mom, and she's like, oh, I don't know what that word is. And I was like, for I don't know, 15 years, I went through life wondering,
what's a cavalier?
Cavalier.
and then you moved to Cleveland.
And then I discovered, you know, the internet, and remembered and typed it in. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Someone who's LeBron here. James. Okay, I get it now. Someone what is it? He has bandana.
I was like, sometimes it can, when they, I know sometimes it can get repetitive, but I rather have repetition, especially for a brain that's marketing towards kids, rather than have words that a kid doesn't understand. Mm-hmm.
Well, this is a pretty deep one. This comes off of one of the MicroMaster bases, Airwave. Function, aerial defense. Motto, my price is too high and you're going to pay. If you think about that, that kind of actually just applies to any military across the planet.
That's a drug dealer.
That's a really deep thing. It's just deep. I'm sorry.
That sounds like a street corner pharmacist.
I know. But you think about it, airline tickets are expensive. Airline fuel's expensive. Mm-hmm. You know, having an aerial defense, everybody in the country has to pay for it. So, I mean, mm-hmm. That's what it is. That's clever.
Sounds like North Korea.
I know.
No, North Korea is more like Generation One Strafe here. Function aerial gunner. The motto? Shoot everywhere, because that's where the enemies are.
That, you know what, you trying to do a Brian Savage impression, because it kind of came out like that. it just made me think, like,
nice.
Like what that is really trying to say is shoot them all and let God sort it out.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I love the Technobots. They're berserkers, you know. They're fun.
Ben, your thoughts on function.
So, agreed with what everyone else said, but for me as a kid, what was really fun and interesting about functions is, see, I grew up among the other fandoms that I was a part of as a kid was Star Trek, right? And it instills in you very early on that there was a team that made things happen. It wasn't just Captain Kirk. If he didn't have his science officer, if he didn't have the engineer keeping the Enterprise going, the communications officer, he needed all those components. So when I started seeing functions, because, you know, you watch a TV show, certain episodes, you think everyone's function is just warrior. Mm-hmm. Now and then you'd see, oh, yeah. Okay, so Ratchet's the Dr. McCoy. You know, Wheeljack is the Scotty. You know, and you kind of make these parallels as a kid. And you think this is really cool because in order to be this fully functioning army and this unit, of course Prime didn't just have a pile of warriors. He needed people to develop weapons. He needed people to repair the troops. You know, and then you got into the more interesting ones like Metallurgist. I don't even know what the heck that was. I had to look that up in the dictionary when I was a kid, yeah. You know?
That was great. That was Cavalier.
Yeah. And I thought, this is fantastic. Like, wow. You know, how much more depth does that add to the universe of Transformers, right? That they even have a Metallurgist in the Autobot army. So that's what it meant to me. It expanded the universe.
I have to say, I've never imagined Wheeljack as Montgomery Scott. But now I'm imagining Wheeljack going, computer. Hello, computer.
SPTH Productions on Twitter just tweeted at us, and he asked us to read Combiner Wars Sunstreaker's bio. Looking at the bio here, yeah, he says a Combiner robot needs contributions from every bot that forms it. Mm-hmm. Optimus Maximus is no different. Optimus Prime can bring the courage. Prowl can provide the strategy. Sunstreaker, he makes his combiner look so good.
So he's Will Smith.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's funny.
All about vanity, so.
Yep, it makes perfect
sense. Being a fan of IDW, I really wish that, you know, now that Hasbro and IDW are teaming up more to get more IDW-inspired designs in the product line, I really wish that would cross over to the bios as well. Because if you look at the current comic books and who Optimus combines with in the comic books, that bio has nothing to do with who Sunstreaker is in that world. And that's what grinds my gears.
we were looking for Sunstreaker, was it?
Sunstreaker.
Okay, I just found it. The expanded bios on TFW that they just posted the other day. Sunstreaker says, pre-mission psych screening report by Rung, Autobot PsyOps specialist. Sunstreaker has always enjoyed spending time on Earth, especially since humans tend to stare at him in both robot and vehicle modes. At his spark, Sunstreaker is a courageous and skilled soldier. It's just that his spark is covered by the most stunning and shiny metal you've ever seen. The only Cybertronian with nearly the same flash and style as his twin brother Sideswipe. Aside from him being yellow and Sideswipe being red, there's one other easy way to tell them apart. According to Sunstreaker, I'm the good-looking one. carries a highly polished cyber machete, as well as a high-yield electron pulse cannon capable of firing 300 bursts per second. Conclusion, cleared for mission. History extracted from compulsory biographical download. It says,
and that,
That
has nothing to do with who Sunstreaker is for me. Because Sunstreaker, you know, that's kind of reminiscent of what G1 Sunstreaker was like. But seeing how Hasbro and IDW are trying to integrate better, like, that has nothing to do with who Sunstreaker is in the comic book. In the comic book, where he does combine with Optimus and Mirage and Prowl and Ironhide, or whoever the other guy is.
Yeah, it's Ironhide.
Okay. He's broken down. He hates himself. He hates humans. He hates Earth. He hates the fact that humans tortured him. He wants to die. He betrayed his comrades. He's living with that notion that he betrayed the Autobots to the Decepticons.
Hmm.
His only real friend is this Insecticon leftover, Bob. I mean, basically, the guy is suicidal. He doesn't get the courage to do it.
That might be a little bit dark for a toy bio, though. But yeah,
they kind of, if you think about it, if his friend is this Insecticon remnants named Bob, why don't they make a Target Master version and he just turns into his Target Master?
Because that would be too cool. But then I would be mad. Then it would be a throw. They don't do that in the comic books.
But there's a little bit more here on the bio. It goes on to say Sunstreaker has been an Autobot stalwart. There's another fun word, stalwart. How many kids know that one? A volunteer for the Ark that first landed on Earth, as well as a member of the initial crew aboard the Lost Light spacecraft. He's an interesting study, conceited enough to crash a shuttle while staring at his own reflection, but selfless enough to detonate a bridge alone with his teammates' escape. While his teammates escape. Forms either an arm or leg of Optimus Maximus, the combined form of Optimus Prime. Has his group affiliation Autobots, subgroup Optimus Maximus. So apparently the combiner name is also the subgroup name. I was not aware of that. Function warrior, status active, and current location Earth. So it's not exactly the same as the G1 tech specs as far as their motto and all that, but it's pretty detailed. And I believe this is the comic one, not the cardback one.
It is detailed, but again, it's speaking to people who remember G1 and don't read the current comic books, which is the inspiration for this toy and the toy and the inspiration for the comic book. So that's annoying me. I understand that the character in the comic book may be a little too dark to be represented in a bio or an extended bio. But I would like to see more of a shared universe between all the forms of media, television, comics, and toy kind of sharing the all, hey, this is who this character is in all these different universes.
Now, I did catch one thing from the Sunstreaker bio that just kind of piqued my interest. Is this indirectly confirming a Combiner War sideswipe? Because it mentions him on the toy bio, and it says there's more than one way to tell them apart. One's yellow, one's red. So I wonder.
To be honest, I don't see why they wouldn't give us a sideswipe. If they're going to give us Sunstreaker, they're normally going to give us a sideswipe. It's probably because the market, I guess, has kind of been drenched with Sideswipe, and they thought it'd be a bad idea to probably release that one first, which would make perfect sense. So everybody's like, oh, here's Sunstreaker. Well, guess what? You're going to get the brother later on.
Well, the breakout
it might be difficult
sense.
Because it might be a confusing message towards kids because Sideswipe is an RID. So it might be they might be trying to separate those characters.
Bring him out in Titan Wars or something other as a repaint.
Yeah. It might be a little confusing for kids to have him in RID, but then also have him in Combiner Wars, and then the parent or the grandparent goes and buys Sideswipe for Combiner Wars, but that's not the one the kid wanted. He wanted the Sideswipe from RID. So it's possible that they make him in Combiner Wars, but it's
well the breakout.
I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't.
Yeah, the breakdown head mold would be perfect for a sideswipe. I think that would work really well.
It's possible. Relevant to tonight's discussion on Facebook, check out Colby Hopper's Transformers BioCard database. He's got a Facebook page and I believe a website. Check that out. He's got a community on Facebook. Just search out Transformers BioCard database.
Is there any way we can possibly post that on Facebook?
I just shared it on the public Facebook group on TFYLP. So check it out. Colby Hopper is a member of the public Facebook group. He's listening tonight, so shout out to Duocon Flywheels.
Nice.
Now, to wrap up our discussion on tech specs and bio cards, I want to go down the row, and if you have one, say let's say your favorite tech spec bio, and if you have one, a least favorite one, or at least your most memorable one. Ben, let's hear from you on that.
Let's see, favorite's a tough one. I mean, there's just been so many over the years. I don't know why, and this is completely how my random brain works sometimes. The one that keeps coming to mind is Valdigus from Car Robots. And I used to have a fellow fan named Doug translate these tech specs for me. I would scan the packaging and send it to him, and it comes back at his email, and I'm like, likes milk coffee. And I wrote back to my friend. I said, is that something that just like you copied and pasted something else and it made it in there? He's like, no. He really likes milk coffee.
It's fantastic.
It's just burned in my brain as like one of the most random tech spec things ever. And that's kind of the wonder of it, right? I mean, we didn't even get into Japanese tech specs and the weirdness that can occur over there. So that's one of my favorite moments. I'm gonna go old school, and I'm going to say something that probably won't surprise anybody, but I love Bumblebee's G1 tech spec, because he was this small guy. He was the physically weakest character, but he was also the bravest. And as a kid who got picked on a lot, as a kid who wasn't the coolest or whatever in school, and you know, he and I shared a physique, it was kind of nice to know that, hey, there's this great character in the show that I really love, and I love the character, and he can be brave. So if he can be brave, then I can be brave. And for a 9-year-old, that's a significant message. So that's always been in my mind.
That's probably why Bumblebee is more or less an iconic. He's pretty much just an iconic character all the way through Transformers. I mean, although we didn't get a Bumblebee in Armada, Hotshot pretty much took his spot. And he had the same color.
Count Spark Club.
That too.
Yeah.
I would count Spark Club.
I would have to say my favorite, obviously, I said it earlier, is Weird Wolf, and because his tech spec really spoke to me as to the character, I related to it, and everything. I love it. But another one that stood out as one of my favorites was G1 Terracon Blot. I mean, you got this nose monster. I mean, he turns into a monster. It's like a giant nose, and with arms and legs. And his bio talks about how much he smells. And I loved it.
He's always losing stuff all over the place, which makes it even more perfect.
Yeah. So the reason the Transformers don't have noses now is because of him.
It's all his fault.
It's all nice. Blot. Blame it on Blot.
Wow.
Yeah.
I always thought he was like a mole or something, but now I'm never going to be able to unsee that. Thank you.
I always thought he was like some kind of weird body gorilla thing.
Yeah, that's what I always thought he was. Yeah.
He's a nose monster, but read his text back.
I prefer nose monster.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
That's awesome.
He is a nose monster. Now everybody loves Blot even more. So maybe we can have... have for TFYLP our new motto, blame it on Blot. There you go.
As opposed to blame it on Don?
Yeah, yeah. Yep. We can always blame stuff on Don. It's always his fault.
Is Blot Don's fault?
Blot is
maybe
the exception. Okay, Rick, your tech spec that really stands out or your favorite?
My favorite is Fortress Maximus. It's kind of bland, but Fortress Maximus to me was an important toy as a kid. I got them. I was living in South America at the time. We were visiting the island of Margarita, and I had never seen this toy before. This huge, giant box, and there's Scorpion next to it, and I begged my mom. I begged her, and I begged her, and I cried, and I threw a fit, and I said, I gotta have this toy. I've never seen
it. To which your mom said, no.
She caved. She caved. My mom spoiled me. You know, bless her. She was very nice to me as a kid. She got it for me, and that was, I loved everything about that toy. I loved the toy. I kept the box. The styrofoam insert became my base for G.I. Joe, became my base for Thundercats. It became the Sulaku when I would use my G.I. Joes to reenact the Aliens film.
Wow.
Everything about that toy, the textbook, I just wanted to know so much about Fortress Maximus, and I was upset he was never in the show. I always kept waiting for him to show up.
Rebirth.
Years later, I'm in high school, and I'm catching reruns of Transformers on Sci-Fi Network.
Yep.
And for the first time ever, there he is. There's Fortress Maximus on the TV for 2 minutes. And I thought my life was complete at that point. And that's pretty much when I gave up on everything and started gaining weight.
To which your image was that of a little doe-eyed fangirl.
Yes. And I had a little sweat mark coming down.
Somebody photoshopped that real quick.
It was before the age of the internet. It was before the internet really took off. I don't know how many of you remember watching the reruns on Sci-Fi
every morning. Every morning, and their horrible editing.
Yes, they cut out a lot from the shows. But Fortress Maximus to this day is still one of my favorite toys because of that tremendous childhood experience.
How about you, Plasticon? Let me guess. Yours is G2.
I'm gonna guess Space Case.
No. It's obviously Wheeljack. I mean, come on. It's Wheeljack.
Windbreaker.
Windbreaker.
Erector.
Erector.
He wasn't G2.
Wheeljack
was not G2, but Wheeljack has more in common with me, and I think that's why I like his bio as much. I mean, he's a mechanical engineer, but never do what your enemy expects you to do, which to me is the way my life is. Never do what people expect it to happen because you can't predict the future. Just do what you can. You know,
I want you to edit this video. No. I'm going to not edit this video.
I'm going to go over here and do something. No. I mean, there's like a point where it's like, it's the whole idea of expect the unexpected. That's kind of what it all is. Like, you can plan and plan and plan, and it never turns out the way you want it to. I don't care what it is. I mean, there's times it's like, oh, I've got all this stuff, and it's all planned and ready to go, and then something happens that completely throws it off. It's like people that plan road trips. I'm going to go here and here and here, and they end up having a flat tire here. They ran out of gas here. All these hiccups and bumps in the road, and that's just how it works.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Jim?
Well, mine is kind of an interesting thing.
I hope it's boring, but now you're just going to give us something interesting. So,
well, no,
how dare you?
It's not so much that I like it for the motto. However, it is a figure that has always had a strong sentimental value to me. It is Generation 1 Headmaster Horrid Bull. And his motto was smash all that stands and trample the rest, which I don't know about trampling the rest necessarily, but you know, to you know, don't let anything stop you. You know, just persevere and keep on keeping on is what I get from that. But you know, I've always, you know, held a really special place in my heart for Horrid Bull. When I was about that tall, you know, about that tall scale, I don't know how big your monitor is, but in 89, my family had a house fire and we lost everything. And we ended up staying with my great-grandmother at the time, and she actually purchased a Horrid Bull for me. We were out shopping one day, and you know, so I've always had that closest to that character and that figure, and so that profile and that motto has always been one of my favorites as a result of that. So no matter what happens, you know, just smash all the stands and trample the rest.
Awesome.
It's just amazing. I honestly think somebody could do this, and I think it'd be really clever if somebody did this. If they went through and got every single solitary tech spec and took every one of the mottos out and basically built a book off of it. Because there's probably so many things that you would get off of just reading this book full of nothing but every motto that ever came out. That would be very interesting. I would love to see somebody do that.
But, you know, one thing that I noticed – yeah, one thing that I noticed, though, with what Jim said, and it echoes what I've said earlier, and to clarify it more, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, Transformer bio cards replace religion or anything, and you know, I mean, or my parents, not like Rick suggested, but. What I'm saying, though, is that some of the not only did they teach me vocabulary. I attribute a lot of my personal heightened vocabulary today compared to, you know, a lot of other people to learning words through Transformer bio cards whenever I was younger. And if I didn't know what a word meant, I would look it up or ask my mom. But little life lessons that I can remember, like Metroplex, you know, I'm a Transformer fan. I'm always thinking about Transformers, even when I'm at work. You know, I mean, I think about Transformers pretty much every hour. You know, there's Transformers are always on my brain in some capacity, it seems like. So it's only natural that I think of things like tech spec bio cards, you know, and mottos. That come to my mind, and Metroplex's Ultra Magnus's motto, and just thinking about, like we said, the profound depth some of these have, and some of them are just silly. Some of them are, I don't quite understand that, but some of them, like those, actually teach you something. And Jim learned a life lesson from Horrible. You know, you learned the life lesson from Horrible. It was a horrible life lesson.
It was.
Life
is cool.
Yeah. but, you know, and I've actually used Pipes' One Man's Junk is Another's Art as something I just think of whenever I hear people, whenever they ask me what I like, and I tell them I collect Transformers, and they're like, what? You know, I remind myself, you know, they might not care. They mean something to me. They mean something to you guys. But to some other people, I had a guy coming in here changing filters the other day in my apartment, and he totally was kind of like, what's all these toys, you know, deal. But I don't care. You know, I don't live my life to please other people. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think Pipes – His motto echoes that sentiment perfectly. You know, this is not everybody's cup of tea. So don't judge other people on what they like or dislike. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great discussion. Ben, since you're with us tonight, let's talk a little bit about BWTF and some of the things that you've had your hand in. I know Rick said he wanted to ask you some questions as well. So let's talk a little bit about BWTF first.
Sure. Ben's World of Transformers was opened in 97. Way back then, I had it hosted on the server of a university I was at the time. You know, we all got our own little personal accounts. I saw Beast Wars, it blew my mind, and I said, I need to do this website thing with it. And, you know, I did toy reviews back then, summaries of the shows, and I got in touch with the story editors of the show, Larry DiTilio and Bob Ford, and they gave me a lot of background information, and I worked with them on kind of shaping some of what would happen in the show, and a couple other fans eventually got involved in that too. So that was a very interesting way for me to enter the online world of Transformers. Before that, I would just post in the Alt Toys Transformers Usenet group. That was where I actually met a lot of friends who I'm still friends with today. So it wasn't just about the toys. It wasn't just about the cartoon. It was about forming a community and being part of the community. And I always saw my website as kind of a piece of a community. You know, a small one, the community's huge now, but, you know, it's one that I think people felt comfortable in. And as the years went along, the website went through many permutations, many URLs, and finally, many years ago, it settled on BWTF.com, which was nice and simple, violates no trademark. No one can come after me for it because it's so random. And, of course, at one time, BWTF stood for Beast Wars Transformers. But
I knew it.
I had to adapt it. Yeah. But then you speculated on that?
Well, when I first stumbled upon your site, this was about 97, 98. Uh-huh. I always used to think that it stood for Beast Wars Transformers, mm-hmm. .com. You know, I thought that was the thing. And then all these years, I see the thing, Ben's World of Transformers, and I'm like, oh.
So around the Beast Machines era, that was about it. So I had to switch it to something, and it just, you know, cosmic kismet just happened to work out that I could use the letters for a different acronym. Nowadays, BWTF, of course, is still there as a website. I have a presence on Facebook, a presence on Twitter, a presence on Instagram, so doing the whole social media thing. I have a contest that I run off my Facebook on the Facebook. I also put content that's not on the website, you know, just things to kind of amuse people, pictures of my collection, scans from old magazines and books that I've been finding. Bringing a little bit of a different flavor than just the toy reviews. While toy reviews are still the main crux of my website, I wanted to start offering more of a variety in terms of my content. And that's been more in the last 2 to 3 years or so. Mm-hmm. And it's been fun.
I want to say something about Ben. And this speaks to his character and who he is as a person. The fact that so many people trust Ben, people who have worked on the inside, people who work at the convention level, the studio level, the design level. Ben's been credited on Beast Wars. He's been fortunate enough to work with the Transformers Collectors Club and helping to figure out what product they bring to you, which the story should be. Ben and I were even once summoned to a super secret Hasbro meeting a few years ago. That we can't talk about. Ben was really, he really had one of the first Transformer websites out there when the internet was still new, and it was kind of hard to find a website that had exactly the specific information you were looking for. And I was all about Beast Wars at the time. And I remember the first time I met Ben, we were on our way to BotCon in North Carolina. It was my first BotCon. We were our friend Rob Yee. And meeting Ben, it was like meeting a celebrity at the time. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was just kind of in awe of him because of everything he had accomplished. Even then, in the late 90s. I think it was, 2000 or 2001?
No, we first met on the photo shoot for your book. Remember?
Oh, yeah.
That's when we first met. Rob drove me down there. Yeah.
It was great meeting Ben. And Ben... he's gone through a lot. He's lived his life. He went through a little dark time, but I would say Ben has always been one of the best people you could ever have a conversation with. He's always been nice. He's never shied away from talking to the fandom, and he's a trusted resource. So I want to thank Ben for being a staple of the fandom, which sometimes can be very divided and very cruel to other people.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
Shut up. I
really appreciate that, man.
Shut up, Dad.
Okay. No, Rick. We took a picture of your Fort Max, right? And didn't you want to put Gears in his little chest?
Yeah.
Right? Remember that?
Yeah, because Gears is my first.
Yeah.
My first Transformers. I got him from Kmart, and he's actually sitting in my Fort Maximus tip.
Awesome.
In my display kit.
Yeah, I still have the book, man. That was fun. That was
so. That was another lifetime ago, but we're getting close to the end of the show, and there are some questions I want to ask you about the TFCC.
I know nothing.
We can transition.
Go ahead.
Okay. So Ben, I'm going to throw some questions at you. Not all of them are nice questions. You and I'll set the stage for the listeners. You and I have had a history of working with Brian and Pete and the Hartmans on creating what the exclusives were, coming up with story ideas, and now we're kind of in a different place. We're not as involved as we used to be, and the club is kind of taking a different direction creatively. So I wanted to ask you a few questions. Let's start first, before we get into the toys, let's start with the state of the TFCC today and making Cybertron their official boards. What is your opinion on that? What do you think the backlash has been amongst the other sites?
So do you want to set the stage as to what that is in case someone doesn't know what that
okay,
is?
Okay, so there's many different message boards out there. I'm sure if someone's listening, they're familiar with Cybertron and AllSpark and T-Formers and TFW. Out of all those sites, Cybertron and TFW 2005 are, of course, the biggest. Providing news on Transformers. They provide forums for people to discuss the subjects. And after now 7-8 years, the Collectors Club has shut down their forum and made Cybertron their official forum and providing them with reveals first before anyone else. What's your thought on that, and do you think it's alienated people?
Well, my first thought on that is obviously Ryan, you know, does a huge amount of work for Sabertron. I mean, he's basically dedicated his life to it. And as such, he's enjoyed a certain amount of success. And Sabertron, we cannot deny that if we looked at Sabertron's server logs, they would be insane. Okay. The guy does work.
It's an awesome website.
Yeah. He puts the effort in. He's dedicated his life to it. I think it's his living. So if you were to target a Transformer site, it just by numbers, and I'm not speaking emotionally, I'm not speaking even as a fan, I'm talking like if you hired me from a marketing firm at cold and I've never heard of any of you guys, and you showed me the server logs of all the websites and said which one should I go and put my products on first, they win. And as a site administrator myself, I have no shame in saying that. I believe I deliver a very different product than Sabertron does, which is very different than what TFW does. And, you know, we all have our niches, and his niche is the most celebrated one. So therefore, in a way, at first I was surprised when the announcement came out, and I thought about it for 10 seconds, and I said, no, if you were going to do this, that's the site. That's the site you're going to hit. So I get it. And, you know, I do project management for a living. And one of the things you have to do when you work on any project is you have to be able to step back from it, take your ego out of it, take your feelings out of it and say, why did this happen? Logistically, why did this happen? And that's what I came up with, what I thought about. Now, I have no official confirmation from the club that that's the case. But come on, any of us know Sabertron gets a boatload of hits every day. I mean, that's just a foregone thing. So that's like my reaction initially was surprise, and then I thought about it and I said, all right, that it makes sense. I get it by the numbers, purely by the numbers. Now, backlash. Well, definitely. You look at TFW's letter, right? They were not happy about it. And that was sad for me to see that because Rick, I think you know this because you've known me so long, but I hate seeing divides in fandom. I hate seeing
as do I.
I hate seeing people doing this, you know, and going at it. And I was like, you know, I get the emotion. I get the anger. I get the frustration. I'm not sure, you know, that's not the way I approached it. The day they made that announcement, I put out a message on my page and I linked to it on my Facebook. And basically the message was, I know you guys have other websites you can go to. I know you have other Facebook pages you can go to, other fans you can follow, YouTube channels, whatever. And every hit, every review that you guys read, I truly appreciate from the bottom of my heart, because, you know, this is a labor of love. I lose money on BWTF every month. I don't make any money off of this, but I do it because I love it. And I love that fans love it and appreciate it enough to spend their valuable time during their day to visit me. That's how I chose to react to it. But you know, everyone reacts differently. In terms of, is that the way I would have done it? I don't know. I'm not in their position. The thing is, there's so much happening at the club that I don't have insight into. I can't speak to what roundtable came to that decision, but watching the reaction of the fandom, I can definitely see TFW, why emotionally they reacted the way it did. But I'll tell you a comment I saw repeated over and over again on Facebook that day, and I think it's a very valid comment. A lot of people basically said, so what you're saying is it'll be on there 5 minutes before it hits all the other news venues, which is about right, because the moment it goes up on there, Everyone else launches it. So, I mean...
Well, here's the thing, though. The backlash is that now certain sites, and TFW amongst them, are no longer providing as in-depth coverage of the TFCC, BotCon, and not necessarily saying, hey, these products are available. Yeah. Go purchase them. I've spoken to Brian. I know why he made the decision, and I won't speak for him here.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. I agree. I agree that that is an unfortunate consequence. I wish it didn't go down like that. I really wish it didn't. I feel bad that it went down like that. And you said you talked to Brian, so you've got more insight than I do. All I can say is that I hope at some point all the venues that were hurt by this, that, you know, felt bad about it, realize that my perspective on this, call it naive, call it over-optimistic, whatever. As a website administrator, as someone who brings information to fans, my job is to keep fans informed, keep fans entertained, and help maintain my little corner of this big community we call Transformers Fandom. That is my job. So as long as I'm running my website, my job is to sometimes, regardless of my feelings, put aside my feelings, put the news out there, and say, you know, hey, here it is. So, hey, ever since the club announced that, you know what? The minute I can get my hands on a news, I'm posting it, you know? You know what part of that is? It's not even just what I just said. It's also, I think it's cool product. I want fans to know about it. I want fans to know that they can get Old Snake with bats.
At the end of the day, it's a business. And I think when you don't have a site that's as big as Cybertron, which is TFW, reporting on that, you're kind of hurting your potential consumer base. Along those lines, about hurting your consumer base or the people you interact with, let me ask you about Pete. It's been a while since Pete and I have spoken. Him and I were very good friends. I've known Pete maybe 15 years. What do you think about Pete's public persona recently and retweeting through the official Transformers Collector site, Twitter, certain political views? Do you think that's had a negative effect on the club? And do you think that he is the right person to be the public voice of the club?
You know, believe it or not, I have gotten most of my information on that secondhand. So I take a lot of it with grain of salt. You know, it's usually someone I know saying, oh, did you know blah, blah, blah happened? So to me, it's gossip. You've actually known Pete longer than I have, I think, but I've known Pete for about a decade. Pardon me. And you want me to speak to Pete as a person? I will tell you that to me, he has never been anything but friendly, fair, a great person to talk to. You know,
I'm speaking in regards to his public persona.
I'm getting to that.
How he represents the club.
I'm getting to that. So in terms of how he represents the club, I think he's doing the best he can. Now, does that mean he's perfect? No, no human being is perfect. I'm not perfect. None of us on this podcast are perfect, right? So maybe he's made a mistake or two before. I don't know. Honestly, I deliberately stay out of a lot of this because this, to me, this isn't what fandom is about. This mud pit fighting, this isn't what fandom is about. You know what I care about is Pete helping to turn out good product. Now, okay, if you feel that he's done something that might hurt the club, then okay, I think, you know, you guys should chat about that. But in terms of my perspective, I see a guy doing his hardest to do what he thinks is right for the brand, do what he thinks is right for the club. Maybe he's made mistakes before. It's possible. But you know what? I'd be lying if I told you I never made a mistake at my job. So, you know, if we want to damn him for that, then damn me too, because I've made mistakes. And I also want to speak, the reason I led with my personal relationship with him is, you know, there's your personal relationship, and then there's the persona that people think you have. So, Rick, you're my friend, right? So you, if someone were to tell you, well, that Benny, he's just a jerk. You know,
I would agree with that.
You know, and he doesn't know what he's talking about with anything. His reviews are rubbish. You know, I would hope after the initial joking, you would actually say, well, no, I mean, he's got some cred. You should listen to this guy. You know, if someone, you know, if someone were to say something about another friend of yours outside of fandom that was untrue, you would say, no, that's not true about Joe Smith. You know, I have this public persona in some quarters of fandom where all they think is I'm a shill for Hasbro. I just love everything that comes out. I'm not honest about the product. And some people get angry at me for it. I've gotten threats. I've gotten flames thrown at me many, many times in the past. So for some people, my public persona is Hasbro's lapdog. That's a phrase I heard a lot in the 90s. Is that who I actually am? No. So with Pete, okay, maybe people have created this boogeyman persona for him, but is that who he really is? Not to me, he's not. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. So speaking about the product, you touched there that you want the people who are working with the club and BotCon to make the best product possible. So with none of the toys really selling out this year, and knowing that they made less numbers than they did the year before, and some of the toys, all the toys actually, still being available online and being offered actually at Auto Assembly this very weekend, do you think it's time for BotCon to look at how they're offering product? Is there a new way they should be offering product? And do you think it's time to bring in a new team to develop the product for the convention and the collector club?
I think it was a tweet or a Facebook post that the club or BotCon put up, something about from now on their product is going to be in more lockstep with what Hasbro is producing. I think that's the term that was used. I can't find it exactly right now. So I think part of what you're saying is already coming true. I think they are starting to maybe do a little less of the obscuro stuff and maybe work more with stuff that's prominent in the fiction and that's outside of the club right now. So the Mayhem Attack Squad, I think, is our first example of that, where they're saying, okay, we're going to take guys who are in the popular IDW comic book, we're going to make toys of them, and they're Combiner Wars toys, which is the current toy line. So they're kind of blending two elements that maybe 3 years ago, maybe they wouldn't have, you know? Mm-hmm. Now, the only thing I'm worried about is one thing I really liked about the club stuff is they are willing to make those crazy obscure things that probably no one else was. I mean, come on. I didn't think we were going to get an Action Master Thundercracker transformable figure years and years ago.
That was all me.
I mean, come on. 10 years ago, it would have been like, are you kidding?
Yeah.
More recently, the Croc, the Treadshot, you know, guys like that. I mean, I just hope things like that don't disappear. You know, I agree they should work in conjunction with Hasbro and really push those sales back up. But at the same time, I want that kind of wackiness and obscurity to still exist, even if it's only one or two of the subscription figures or a souvenir figure or something like that. I don't want it to go away altogether.
So what do you think about the format, though, that they're being offered in? Do you think it's too much now? Because now you're paying for a flight, you're paying to get into the convention, which is the box set in many cases. And then you have your three souvenir sets, you have your Creo set, you have your class, custom class figure. Is it too much, and do you think there's a different way they should offer their figures? And this is speaking to the fan part of you.
I wouldn't be shocked, honestly, and this is the fan part of me, I wouldn't be shocked if the offering shrunk at some point, just, you know, to lessen the potential financial burden on everybody. And I don't just mean us as fans buying it. I mean as them producing it. You know, a little less risk, hopefully a little more reward, and it'll be better. And it'll be better for everybody because, you know, you go there and you buy all these toys, and they're fun toys, but you're right, it is expensive. It's not cheap. And it would give a little relief to our wallets collectively at the con, and maybe even their own, because, you know, they don't have to produce as much, and hopefully they sell more and they kind of level out, you know, profit wise. I'm hoping for that, because I was a little sad that not everything sold out. I'm so used to all the BotCon toys selling out by the time we all get home, right? Mm-hmm. And I want to see those days again. I think that'll be awesome.
And so do I, but I think it's also very telling about the fandom itself when the BotCon toys don't sell out. With all these other third-party companies and other conventions, and how expensive it can be to attend one of these conventions such as BotCon, I think it's very telling in the fandom's eyes what that means. So I think you've done a great job answering these questions. I'm going to throw one last one at you. And what do you think going forward would be the best direction for the club and BotCon to take, either product-wise, story-wise, or in general?
I think they're already doing it, if indeed they are working more hand-in-hand with Hasbro, because I think marrying the two, having them holding hands, is a lot better. Then I think for a long time, Timelines has existed as its own little ball, you know, its own little universe, and maybe kind of even just having a dotted line to the main line will help them a bit. And I'm hoping that expands the possibilities for what they can do. And you might remember in the past, Rick, we used to always say, is Hasbro going to let us do that? Is Hasbro going to let us use that mold, use that character? Hopefully, if they have that connection, that won't be as much of an issue. And the fact that we're already seeing Combiner Wars figures offered for the next subscription club, I think shows that, mm-hmm. that those walls have come down a lot. And I'm just fingers crossed that it all really works out for them.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Well, you know, I do want to comment on myself from the last thing there about the, you know, increasing or decreasing the financial impact on the individual collectors. We as a fandom are a very diverse group of people. That goes without saying. You know, there's a lot of us, you know, that are collectors, have good paying jobs, and can afford the box sets and all these exclusives. Me, I'm struggling. You know, I make good money, but, you know, my life right now is just in turmoil. And you know, I see these toys that I want. I went to BotCon this year, and I wanted the set. I loved Oil Master. Great figure, great idea. I love the fact that they dipped into that well of unreleased toys or unreleased characters and brought it into the realm of, hey, here's this toy. But I don't own that toy because it was just prohibitively expensive for me. And then you look at the fact that if you just want to get one single little toy from, if you're attending BotCon, let's say, you know, you go as an attendee, you don't want to pay the promise package and all that stuff like that. And you want to buy a single toy, like you wanted, let's say you wanted the Red Hoist this year. If you wanted the Red Hoist, you had to buy the Red Hoist and the Black Skids. So, and that's expensive. You know, why couldn't you, instead of paying $80 for a two pack, why can't I as an attendee or a non-attendee just order that one figure? Mm-hmm. I know it's all financial metrics. You know, if we get them to buy the two pack, you know, that's more money for us. But if you're talking about a fandom, and you are putting a convention on to celebrate those fandoms, I understand it's a business, but at the same time, what is your business? Your business is the fans. Mm-hmm. And if you don't offer something out there for everyone and not just cater to the people who can afford it, then you cut off part of your clientele. I think with the current model that they have, and your line of questions tonight, Rick, I think we're on point. You know, I mean, they were not necessarily comfortable questions to ask nor answer, I'm sure, but they were pertinent and relevant, and they do have bearing on every single fan out there. And whenever you have a club that, whenever people bring their concerns to the club, and then they're met with with PR responses, we're working on it, things will get better, things are going to change next year. How many times have we heard those words? Things are going to be different next year. And then next year comes, and they're same story, different year. I have a lot of concern about that. I've made it no secret that I don't agree with everything that the club does. I don't agree with the way they do things, but that doesn't mean I hate the club. It doesn't mean that I won't support the club in anything they do. I went to BotCon this year. You know, I felt this way for the past several years about, you know, the club and BotCon and everything. I think BotCon is entirely too expensive, you know, considering whenever you can have unofficial club or avenues do it for much cheaper. And honestly, it's just as fun, if not more so. But that's, I say these things, and I don't want to make it sound like I'm hating and dissing the club. I'm not. It's just very real criticism of what they're doing. And I'm not sitting there saying, Brian and the club should stop what they're doing and bring in a new regime and all this. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, listen to the fans more and give us something for everyone. Mm-hmm. I think that's what we need as a fandom. And I don't want people to get the wrong impression that we're sitting here dissing the club everything's open. You know, it's like this podcast. I understand this podcast isn't everybody's cup of tea, but you have people who absolutely love this podcast. And it's the same way with the conventions. It's the same way with the club. You either like it and partake in it, or you don't like it and don't partake in it. But nobody asks you to love everything that they do. You know, we've been criticized. I love your show, but it's too long. You know, well, if there's people out there that love our show because it's a good show and it's a good lengthy show and informative. If we shorten a show, then we'll take those people. You can't please everyone, but you can at least put something out there for everyone to partake in. You know, even in small part. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, and I don't think anyone here wants the club to fail.
No,
I know the people who work at the club personally. I care for those people. I have relationships and friendships with those people. And I know I can call Brian anytime, even though I'm no longer affiliated with the club. But there are some criticisms. There's always room for improvement in anything. And nothing that we say is meant to hurt. It's just meant to be it's out of curiosity. It's to inform the fandom. It's to hopefully propel the club to another level.
Absolutely.
I
well,
agree.
That being said, with that being said, go ahead.
Okay, I just wanted to interject one thing right quick. What you were saying about the gift sets and the two packs and all that is how much more product can be moved at a lower individual cost, catering to those who have a lower budget. You know, instead of an $80 figure, you know, a lot of people can't buy the $80 box set because a lot of people can't buy that because they don't have $80. But what if they have $55? You know, how many people can buy the $40 individual figure? How much more product are you going to sell that way? You might make so much more because of that. So,
well, I want to kind of piggyback on that. It's kind of like, you know, when you go to the website and you order Cars app individually. Mm-hmm. And then you had the Hound and the Prime that came out. Why couldn't that came in a smaller box set? I mean, my thing is, why can't you do something like that? Instead of having five figures, knock it down to maybe like a two-pack or a three-pack, and you still have the awesome artwork on it. Still put like the cool stuff inside of it. People will still buy that. It's just you got folks that part those sets out because they don't like a particular figure, or they hoard and buy two or three of them and then keep the other two in the closet and sell it later. My whole thing is like I think it's a bit ridiculous. I mean, I think the idea of buying individuals are a pretty good idea, but
well,
maybe a five pack, but
it's something that Hasbro obviously understands. I mean, it's why you have different price points. I mean, it's why we have a huge Supreme class Starscream, and then we have this guy. You know. Mm-hmm. You cater to you have something out there for everyone. I mean,
right.
I wish BotCon and the club could offer small things like this. I mean, I understand, you know, it's limited runs and, you know, you might pay $30 for this, but an exclusive one of these, like give me one of these in Sunstorm color, mm-hmm. $30, if it's limited run.
Well, like I was saying, I mean, like myself, if I was going to go there and if I had the money in at the time and everything to go to BotCon, I would have only been after the Hound and the Prime. I wouldn't have cared about the rest. I mean, Oil Master's cool, but I don't. My thing is Oil Master would be the only one I'd want out of that entire set. You see what I mean? So Oil Master itself could have came in a nice, awesome box, maybe with that character art that Proto Man mentioned about that was really, really cool. It looked like an old Action Master. He could have came in a box like that, and people would have bought that like that, and then the rest of the figures would have sold along the way, you know? But that's just stuff like that. I mean, they could easily do.
Well, you know, remember, there was another painted prototype out there for that Ape Pretender, so I wouldn't be surprised if that Oil Master toy shows up again in those other alternate colors.
And I would love it too.
Just for you. Just for you.
All right. For those, we're running a bit long here, but there is one last thing. For those of you who have been following us on Twitter and everything, and are aware that that Rick Alvarez, he's got this little endeavor. I'll say little in quotation mark. called Play With This Too. He is got something to show us today. I'm getting ready to pull it up here. It is a reveal for a color scheme on Boneyard, and I'll let you take it as I get ready to share here.
So me and a few friends, some of us who have worked for Mattel or Hasbro or Diamond, we've kind of put this team together, and we had a Kickstarter a few months ago. And we're going to try this again. And we're going to, after all the feedback we got, we're going to put our best foot forward and put Jetstrike and Boneyard out front first. And this is kind of the first redeco, or the second redeco, actually, of Boneyard that we're going to be available in our first tier. So you'll be able to buy this right off the bat. This is Wastelander. He comes with three sets of hands. One set's not shown. Comes with his skull axe, his sword, and blaster, which combine his shield, and two alternate heads. So here he is. This is our exclusive reveal to TFYLP, the Wastelander, here in rendered form. Mm-hmm. And next month, come September, we're going to be launching our Kickstarter, which I hope that TFYLP will plug. I don't know. I got a friend on the inside there.
It's possible that might happen. Maybe. Yeah. But we'll have to see there. I mean, there's a few million dollars to have to change hands here, but
don't we have to have a round table about this?
Well, there are samples being sent out to friends, but So here it is. This is kind of we're gonna put these two figures out there in various colors each. They'll also be customizer edition colors. They'll all come in a white plastic, and you can mix and match the parts and paint them however you want to paint them.
I have to say, I am digging this color scheme. I'm really liking the blue chopper face there. That's quite nice.
Yeah. I
can't get over the shield, though. I love the shield. I'm sorry. I'm a Triceratops fan.
The shield also works as a head. So you can
pop it works as a head?
It also
oh my
works
God,
as a head.
That is awesome. So that is sick.
You can take the armored head or the human head off and place that shield as a head, and in later weapons, so the staff can place that shield on a staff. Yes, yes. I love dinosaur saucers, and Slag was the only Dinobot I had as a kid. So
you know, that's what I love about these guys is that they're figures, they're toys that are new and in of themselves, but they have elements from different lines that you merge together into one ball of awesomeness. And that's what I love about this. And I'll tell you what, these were on display this past weekend at TF Expo. For the first day or so, we had them at the table there at Captured Prey. And we also had them out in the display case next to the registration table. And the comments that people were saying, they were looking at these things and they were just blown away at the level of detail and everything. And the size, Boneyard here is, you know, pretty good size. The picture that I had here a few weeks ago with Boneyard next to Masterpiece Grimlock, you know, just to give a good size comparison with him, great size, the posability. I mean, even in the abdomen where it poses, you know, I mean, if you're into anything like any line of 80s toys. I mean, you got elements of Transformers, you got elements of He-Man, you got elements of Dinosaurs, you got elements of everything right here. Why can't you? I mean, there's nothing to not love about these guys. And
well, thank you very much.
Yes.
So we're hoping it's
and I'm not even on your payroll, and I'm sitting here plugging this guy because I love it. I'm a fan, and I'm a Transformer fan primarily. I mean, you look around my room, and I have hardly anything that's not Transformers in here, but I would happily buy one of these. You know, I mean, they're that awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, just, I love what, well guys, we've ran a bit long, but I have to say this is probably one of the most fun episodes that I've done in quite a while.
Yes, definitely.
I mean, just a lot of great information that's been imparted here. Ask the listeners, if you have any questions, comments, let us know. You can email us at podcast@tfylp.com. Or you can, the easiest and best way is via Twitter @TFYLP. Mm-hmm. And relevant to our discussion today, I want to hear the listeners. What's your favorite tech spec motto? Our own headmaster, Don, tweeted a while ago, one of his favorites is G1 Cosmos. Reach for the stars, but never leave your friends. And I think that's a fantastic motto. But I'd like to hear other listeners. What's your favorites? Post them on our Facebook group and tweet us at TFYLP. Love to hear from you. Well, guys,
but before we wrap up, I just wanted to interject a couple of news items I spotted as I was browsing here. They've unveiled we're getting another Masterpiece Bumblebee in a red color scheme now, which is not Cliff Jumper. Just pointing that out. It is a red Bumblebee.
I think that's his name, not...
That could be.
Not Jumper. Yes.
And also, apparently, there have been discovered Wave 1 Combiner Wars profiles. I don't know if it's the full comic. I believe it is. With the full profiles that we didn't otherwise get in the Wave 1 with the three aerial bots and the Stunicon drag strip. And those are available. They've scanned those, as well as looks like the inner back cover, what they have the artwork and the line art and all that to look at. So you might want to check those out too.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, speaking of the red Bumblebee and kind of merge a couple of things that we've been talking about here. You know, you talk about the red Bumblebee, and we just got through talking about some stuff with the club and everything. If you're going to repaint the crap out of Masterpiece Bumblebee, make a glyph.
Yes,
I would totally buy that sucker. I want a blue Bumblebee. Give me Glyph. Yes.
Hey, Ben, you probably know this off the top of your head. Which one was the girl? Was that Glyph or Tap Out?
Glyph is the female. Yeah.
Mm. I would totally get that. Ben, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight. It's thank been you. A pleasure to have you on. I hope you enjoyed your time here. And I want to extend a invitation that anytime you want to come back or anything you want to talk about anything, just let us know. Love to have you back.
Sure thing, man. Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. And thank you for everything that you've done. Thank you for everything. BW2TF, everything. Big fan of yours. I know I've met you a few times at cons and everything, and it was a pleasure talking to you at BotCon this year and everything. But Rick, Plasticon, Jim, thank you guys. We will see you next time on Transformers for your listening pleasure. Check us out on YouTube. Check us out on iTunes whenever I can figure out what's going on, why it's not working on there. But in the meantime, you can check us out at tftalk.net or tfyop.com, whichever is more convenient for you to type in into your URL bar. They both go to the same place. But you can download the latest episode of the podcast there in MP3 format. I know that's a little bit gangly, but for right now, until I can figure out what's going on, that's the best thing to do. Sorry about that, guys. But we'll see you next time on Transformers for your listening pleasure. This is Weird Wolf signing off.
Good night.
Night, everyone. Good night,
you guys.
This has been Transformers for your listening pleasure, a presentation of tftalk.net. We'd like to thank you for listening and ask that you please rate us on your favorite podcast outlet and share us with your friends. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TFYLP. Email us at podcast@tfylp.com. This is Paul Lighting, and on behalf of TFYLP, we'd like to thank you again for listening, and we hope you'll join us next time for another TFYLP.